As we are continuing this message series, Get Real, we use this opportunity to see how quotes and ideas that we have heard, maybe even used ourselves throughout the years, how it is they actually fit or maybe not fit with Scripture. And so today we tackle the very famous phrase, God will not give you more than you can handle. Some of us, if we have heard this quote, may feel comforted and even empowered. Others of us, depending on what we have gone through, we might hear that quote and roll our eyes, maybe especially in these last couple of years. This likely comes from just one verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, where Paul writes, God is faithful. God will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. Or another way that it is written, God will not let you be tested beyond your strength. So in the midst of this, Paul is kind of connecting the people of Corinth to the Israelites wandering through the exile after Moses leads them out of Egypt. And Paul is writing about how sometimes this wandering experience we find ourselves through can lead us down a path that is not linked to who we are. In the midst of uncertainty, we can begin lifting up and shifting our attention to things which do not strengthen us, but in fact actually tempt us. Warren Pattison, our director of adult ministries, reminded me that Adam Hamilton had written a book on a similar series, which kind of makes sense because at this point, Reverend Adam Hamilton has pretty much written a book on everything. But it was helpful to kind of thumb through some of his writings and sort of see how we were kind of on the same page. And part of what he writes in this chapter is there's a big difference in this verse by saying that we are tested versus how we are tempted. Now, part of Adam's argument is that the Greek word kind of means the same thing, tested and tempted, as far as the word itself. But the context that Paul is writing about is more about the temptation that we might find when we are wandering in uncertainty versus the way that we might be tested for our strength or our faith. So what Adam is saying is Paul is writing about a time in which the people of Corinth, much like the Israelites, are wandering through these years trying to figure out who they are, who God is. And in the midst of this, other things seem to be getting their attention. And rather than focusing on their identity, rather than focusing on their journey, they tend to follow these distractions. So it brings up the question, of course, how do we not live in temptation? Well, one of the reasons and one of the helpful things is to realize that it's not all about avoiding. Because if we put all of our time and all of our energy into avoiding this temptation, then in fact we are actually still giving it the very attention that it needs from us. Rather, we focus on God. We focus on God who is leading us through, who is leading us out of this wilderness. Or maybe we see how God is wanting us to sit and to rest, to grow, to change, to realize in the midst of this wilderness, rather than just kind of trying to find our way out of this season of discomfort. Plus, as Pastor Adam writes, this saying, God will not give us more than we can handle, it feeds into a theology which suggests that all of our hardship and all of our grief comes from God, a God who simply wants to test us, to see how we will respond. So we might ask, well, so God gives us all of this? And our response finally might be, after years and years, after times of strife and hardship and challenge, of hearing that quote over and over again, we might finally just say, thanks, but no thanks. So if we are not only talking about avoiding temptation, then we also need to face the hard truth that we will and we do encounter things which we simply cannot handle. And Paul even writes about this in the very next letter of 2 Corinthians. In chapter 1, verses 8 through 9, he writes, we do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters. We don't want you to be unaware of the affliction we experienced in Asia, for we were so utterly, unbearably crushed that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death so that we would rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. Now, we don't know exactly what Paul is referring to in whatever event that happened where he feels this way, but most of us, if not all of us, probably know what it means to feel unbearably crushed. And if we have not experienced it ourselves, we have likely seen how it has been happening to others, particularly in this season, as Pastor David lifted up in our time of prayer. People of Kabul, people of Haiti, people of Louisiana, of New York and New Jersey, of California, maybe even right next door. Do we say to all of this, to all who are suffering, well, God won't give you more than you can handle? A few months ago, back when the numbers of infections were down and it was a bit safer to go out, our family decided to finally get together for a reunion. Morgan and Ben and I got into our car and we drove all the way to Kansas and back again. In the midst of that, we were able to see relatives, family members, loved ones, people who we had not seen for over a year. And we were able to meet in Kansas City. We rented a house and spent several days together. And as we were going through the paperwork to get ready for this stuff, part of the acknowledgement was, you know, if you break anything, if something doesn't work, you'll get in touch with us or you'll do what you can. You know, it will be addressed in some way. And it even had this little line that addresses sometimes when things happen unexpectedly. And the motto was, and I'm going to paraphrase, manure happens. And we thought, you know, that's the motto. That's going to be the motto of our vacation. It was, manure happens, enjoy your vacation. It was this acknowledgement that no matter how big or how thick your contract might be, there's always going to be those circumstances that are unforeseen, and you just have to get through them. And so as I thought about that reality of life, it reminded me of my favorite sermon that Reverend Adam Hamilton preached, and it was years and years ago. And the title of it was Manure Happens. And he talked about how he and his wife I don't know if they do anymore, but at the time they owned two horses on their home. And they talked about the manure management plan that they had to have because two horses, if you know anything about horses, produce a lot of manure. In fact, Adam said, the average horse produces 50 pounds of manure a day. That's 9 tons a year. Adam said, and I quote, that's a lot of poop. So you have to have a management plan of some kind. He says there's several ways that you can address this. The first way is you can do absolutely nothing. And you can just let it accumulate across your land. Maybe if you ignore it, it'll just go away, but odds are it will just sit there and will continue to sit there. In fact, as it piles up, it will attract parasites, it will attract flies, it might even contaminate your water supply. Eventually, it will overshadow and overwhelm everything else. He said the second option is you can try to bury it. Now, the difficulty of that, of course, is as more manure comes into life, you have to dig more holes. And when you bury it, 30 years later, if you dig it up, it will still be there. You cannot bury the manure in your life. So he said, option three is you can try to burn it. Now, in order to burn manure, you have to douse it with a lot of chemicals. I mean, a lot of chemicals. And if you do burn it, there's all this smoke, there's all this odor. It can still attract flies and parasites. And the more you need to burn, the more chemicals you have to put on this reality of life. So you can treat this reality with chemical substances, but it tends to do more damage than to get rid of what it is that you want to get rid of. Then he said, there is a fourth option. And this last option is composting. And when you compost manure, you have to physically take it and you have to expose it. You have to expose it to life and you have to expose it to oxygen. And not only do you expose it to these two things, but you have to constantly turn it. You have to shift it. You have to process it. Until finally, after some time, these elements start to turn into pieces that actually give and produce life. And then Adam said, you know how many times or how often you have to do this? Once every 7 days. Once every 7 days, we come together with all of the manure in our life. And what Paul is writing to us, what God is proclaiming to us, is rather than trying to hide it, rather than try to bury it, rather than trying to douse it, rather than try to do everything possible to get rid of it other than exposing it, when we finally see that we can expose this stuff in our life, it starts to transform. It starts to become something that we are not ashamed of, but something that actually gives and produces life. We air the stuff out that we cannot handle. And we show it to the light. And in the midst of that, we see how God is within and throughout. And we are restored. And so toward the end of this chapter, Adam writes, it's not that God will give us anything that we can handle, but that God will help us handle all that we have been given. So today, as Pastor David has said, today is Communion Sunday. In the midst of this, we discover life and restoration is available and is powerful, even in a small, meager piece of bread and in a little cup of juice. Or to say it further, whatever it is that our friends, our siblings have at their table, whatever the element is. And it teaches us that these material idols that we sometimes worship cannot give us the nourishment that we are looking for. It cannot give it the life that we are pursuing. Discovering that not only are these elements sufficient, but also God's table is sufficient for all of us, every single one of us, to come and approach and receive. Everyone from the absurdly wealthy to the unfairly impoverished, all are invited to approach God's table. And this teaches us that the idols that we sometimes put our value and our trust into, they cannot represent the love and the light which embodies Jesus Christ. When we come to this realization, our imaginations, as much as our lives, are restored because we see how it is that God is in the midst, even in the things that we cannot handle. So how do we remember that God walks with us? How can our imaginations be restored again so that our attention and our focus and our worship is primarily on God? Well, as we do this, I invite us to read together a very familiar psalm, a psalm which not only gives us comfort, but also a remembrance of not only who God is, but also, maybe even more importantly in this season, what God does. I invite us to read Psalm 23 together. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When Paul writes, God will not let you be tested beyond your strength, he is writing to an entire community. Not just one person. We do not approach the table alone, nor do we carry our burdens alone. Not just to the table, but simply in life. We remember this as we approach the table together, as we receive the elements together, as we confess together. We come together in holy composting, airing out all of this stuff we cannot handle, so that as we journey together, we discover our shepherd who leads us through. It can be hard enough to carry the burdens which are in our lives. And to be doing that in the midst, to have someone tell us, well, God will not give you more than we can handle, can sometimes be the very last thing that we cannot handle. And so as we have received the body and blood of Christ, might this be a reminder, a holy composting that gives air, light, and life to the reality that God does not give us more than we can handle, but that when life gives us more than we can handle, we are reminded that God walks with us. And so as we've just sung, stand, rise, and walk. And as we walk, may we participate perhaps in some of the service opportunities that are a part of our congregation, so that we might say to others, whatever it is you are going through, we will go through it together. And most importantly, God walks with us, and not only walks with us, but also leads us through, so that we might receive air, light, bread, juice, the life-giving elements we need to be who God has truly called us to be. So may we go with those elements among us, knowing that God goes with us. And may that give us peace. Amen.